This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Good evening, lovely people, and welcome to your Monday night edition of The Informer on Joy 94.9. My name is Emma Arnold, and I will be your host for tonight, along with my co-host, Stephanie McLean. On tonight's show, we will be addressing some very important issues concerning the LGBTQIA community. Last week, the New South Wales government proposed changes to HIV laws, which will force medical practitioners to report the names of people living with the disease to the government. Tonight, I'll be joined by Nick Hollis from the Institute of Many to get an understanding of the potential ramifications should the decision go through. Of course, Steph, the stigma around HIV is just one of the many challenging factors for those dealing with this disease.
Indeed, it is, Emma. It's something that is incredibly misunderstood, and we could all benefit from a better understanding of the reality of HIV as well as the lives of those living with the disease. But speaking of stigma, new research reveals that 52% of young Australians with mental health problems are too embarrassed to come forward with the problem. A little later on, I'll be catching up with Chris Tanti, the CEO of Headspace, to chat about their new campaign, The Big Stigma, which encourages people to tear down the stigma associated with mental illness. It's going to be a big show, and we're looking forward to bringing you up to speed on these important issues that are affecting our community. As always, we want to hear what you have to say, so please send through an email to onair@joy.org.au or text the studio on 0427 Joy 949.
Or you can always hit us up via Twitter or Facebook at The Informer Joy. But before we get started, a little reminder that this week is Radiothon Week, and what a better time to remind you why we're here. Now, as a community radio station, we're here to share the stories that matter most to you, and we want to hear your voice, but put through on a platform that allows other people to comment on it as well, because we can't carry on without your support. So please, if you haven't already, you can subscribe or donate to Joy 94.9 via our website www.joy.org.au. And if you love what we're doing, then tell all your friends, your family, your extended family to do the same. Welcome back. You're listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. Tonight we'll be talking about the New South Wales government proposed changes to the HIV laws, as well as how the stigma attached to mental health is preventing many young Australians from talking about their issues. Shortly, we'll be discussing the proposed changes to Section 56 of the New South Wales Public Health Act, which would remove the exemption of HIV and AIDS as a notifiable disease. The New South Wales Health Department said reporting patients' names would allow health professionals to confidentially follow up with people diagnosed with HIV to see whether they had been able to access treatment, and would also provide better data to track and predict the spread of HIV. Now, to get a better idea of some of the ramifications of this, we are joined live now by Nick Hollis from the Institute of Many. Thanks for joining us, Nick.
Thanks for having me on.
Now, just to start off, could you tell our listeners a bit about the work you do for the Institute of Many?
Oh, sure. Well, the Institute of Many is a peer-run advocacy platform and social umbrella for people living with HIV. And we have meet-up chapters in Sydney and Melbourne and all around Australia, and some digital platforms for the community to come together.
Great. Now, the actual issue at hand, which is why you're here and it's why you've been in quite a couple newspapers lately, the identification rules were established in 1980s to protect people who contracted the disease from discrimination and possible legal persecution for homosexuality, sex work and drug use. Now, do you think that the proposed changes in this law reflect a belief that we are beyond this stigma now, or do you think that the fear is still a factor for many?
I think that the proposed identifiable database is being optimistic that, you know, HIV exceptionalism or the discrimination around it is something that we can work towards ending. But I think, sadly, the stigma and discrimination attached with living with HIV is still too significant for the community to go on an identifiable database.
So it's kind of like the New South Wales government is going on this wishful thinking and not actually listening to what people living with HIV are saying.
Oh, I mean, I wouldn't quite put it down to wishful thinking, but I think, you know, they are being very proactive with their goal of ending HIV by 2020, and that's fantastic. I mean, you know, the New South Wales Ministry of Health deserves to be congratulated for remaining a world leader in working with communities to prevent the spread of HIV and work with HIV-positive people. Don't get me wrong. I think, if anything, this is a bit of an overreach. You know, I think that they're looking for more innovative ways to help end HIV. And, you know, these proposed changes for an identifiable database are part of that, but it's absolutely an overreach while we as a community still risk being criminalised and discriminated against.
Well, that is one of the many issues for people with HIV and the stigma that has long been surrounding it. What are the actual health risks, both mentally and physically, that this stigma creates?
When you come down to it, HIV stigma is basically the driving force for the majority of all HIV infections, because HIV stigma is preventing people from getting tested. It's preventing them from, in some instances, disclosing their HIV status out of fear of rejection or persecution and criminalisation. And it's stopping people from accessing care. So really, if we want to talk about ending HIV, we've got to talk about ending HIV stigma.
Absolutely. Well, ACON, the AIDS Council of New South Wales, have stated that they see the benefits of the proposed change, but they see also that it might put people off testing, but they said it can improve patient linkage to and retention in care, as well as create a better understanding of HIV transmission risk factors. Now, to what extent do you agree?
Well, I mean, I think it's great. ACON have come out to say that they believe that a identifiable database is not worth it, shall we say, that there are more potential harms than benefits. But again, this idea that an identifiable database will somehow improve retention in care and linkage to care is really hard for us to accept at the moment, because it's quite a big, lofty idea, and we haven't heard any tangible, not reasons, but ways in which they're going to roll this out. So, you know, does that mean that someone from New South Wales Health is going to come knock on your door if you haven't been to pick up your pills for a couple of months? Does that mean that, you know, they're going to get a phone call from someone? You know, we're talking here about communities which are marginalised. And the unfortunate thing about HIV is that, it affects a lot of marginalised communities. And those are communities who typically, and with good reason, don't always trust the state and the systems in place that are set up to look after us, and that's with very good reason. So, yeah, for me, the benefits just don't outweigh the harm.
Now, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to The Informer, and I'm speaking with Nick Hollis from the Institute of Many about the proposed changes to New South Wales legislation that would make HIV a notifiable disease. Now, Nick, this is an issue that needs a much bigger dialogue around it. I mean, I see a need almost for a potential national discussion, but it can be a hard issue to talk about when you want to remain politically correct. What advice do you have for talking about this issue in a constructive way rather than one that can be fracturing to the identity and feelings of those affected?
Well, I think with anything, you just want to approach these conversations with empathy. People living with HIV, you know, part of several communities, including the LGBTIQ community. I mean, we as a community are really fantastic at putting ourselves out there and identifying. And I think we just need to have more empathy around this conversation and not view us as patients or victims. And to me, it's regrettable that there are some organisations that are funded to advocate for HIV-positive people that are treating us more like patients than people.
So do you think that is reflected in the New South Wales government's new take? Like, this creating this database, it's kind of, I mean, you've mentioned potential criminalising and the way it's kind of pinpointing you. Do you think that's depersonalising people with HIV?
I think the risk of it, we definitely run the risk of it. That, to me, is more of a concern than someone actually doing something, untoward with this data. But the threat of it hanging over our heads is going to be enough to disincentivise people to go and get tested and go to get treatment.
Well, what advice do you actually have for listeners for whom this issue may be affecting as far as seeking help goes and seeking treatment goes?
Well, I mean, at the moment, these are all just proposed changes in New South Wales. So at the moment, you're not going to be going onto an identified database. You do go on. HIV is a notifiable disease, so you do go onto a database, but your name is de-identified. So at the moment, there's no risk. So this is absolutely not a call for people to not go and get tested or anything like that. In fact, now is absolutely the time to go and get tested.
Go and get tested before you will get identified. Yeah, gosh, it's actually kind of... that sucks. That's the kind of attitude we almost have to take if this goes through.
I mean, there is a very real risk that if this identifiable database goes through, people are going to not go and get tested because they're concerned about going on a database. Mm. That's a very real risk. And I think that, you know, the New South Wales Health has to consider that when their objective is about caring for people living with HIV.
Yeah, especially when there are so many issues as far as government monitoring goes, and people can get very paranoid and almost, and absolutely, you're right, with reason. So it's kind of like, is this the best course of action, and how far have they considered the effects on the actual lives of people living with
it? Yeah, absolutely. And it's not really talking about paranoia here. I mean, you know, in New South Wales alone this year, we've had two HIV-positive people face charges, one extricated to WA, and that's her name's CJ Palmer. She's a sex worker, and she's a trans woman sitting in a men's prison. Yeah. Now, if you can't tell me that sort of very public treatment and criminalisation of people living with HIV isn't going to create a concern that a name database is going to lead to more instances of criminalisation, then the New South Wales government is very, very wrong.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for talking to us. That's about all we have time for. You can contact Nick through the Institute of Many. The links to their page will be up on our podcast after the show. Once again, thanks so much for joining us, Nick.
Thanks for having me on.
You're listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9 with Emma Arnold and Stephanie McLean. That was Nick Hollis from the Institute of Many. If you've missed anything so far, a podcast of our show will be up shortly on joy.org.au/The Informer.
There is a lot of stigma around mental health as well. And in recent research, it shows that a staggering 52% of young Australians with mental health problems are too embarrassed to discuss the problem. This statistic has instigated the Big Stigma campaign run by Headspace, a national youth mental health foundation, providing early intervention mental health services to 12 to 25-year-olds. Joining me now is the CEO of Headspace, Chris Tanti. Good evening to you, Chris.
G'day, hi.
So to start off with, can you tell us a little bit more about the Big Stigma campaign that was launched today?
We sort of like the idea of the Big Stigma because Australia is just sort of fascinated with really big things like the big koala and the big banana, etc. So we came up with a concept of the Big Stigma as a way of sort of symbolically trying to tear down stigma that surrounds people with mental health problems. And what we're trying to do by doing that is encouraging them to seek help, because help is, you know, getting help for these problems is really important, and often people wait till it's, you know, till they're in crisis before getting help.
And why is there still such a stigma surrounding mental illness?
Oh, look, I think we shy away from talking about psychological and emotional distress, and I don't know why that is, really. I just think as a community, we really struggle with the idea that people might be somehow distressed by what they're thinking. I think the other problem is that what happens as a result of psychological or emotional distress is that behaviour changes. And sometimes behaviour is a bit unusual and people struggle to make sense of it. Or people withdraw, and so they become increasingly isolated and have difficulty talking to other people. So, and what we tend to do, because we're all Australians, is we tend to withdraw and from those people, and we just sort of figure they've got to sort it out. But actually, you know, the way to sort it out is by talking to other people.
You would think that with all the discussion and dialogue around mental health and these kinds of issues now, in comparison to, say, 10, 15 years ago, you would think that the rates would be going down, but that's not the case.
No, and look, I think the issue is that we're better at detecting it. We're somewhat better at talking about it. I don't know that we're necessarily better at seeking help. And I think when it comes to wanting to help someone, we don't feel like we've got the tools or the equipment to do that. And so, you know, I think education is part of this. We need to be better educated around the signs and symptoms of depression, anxiety, and, you know, in the same-sex attracted community. You know, suicide is four times more likely than mainstream society, and that is an alarming statistic, and it increases the further you go out of the metropolitan area. So it's something we really need to attend to.
And you mentioned before we are all Australians. Do you think our Australian culture is contributing to this not wanting to come forward and talk about mental health?
Look, I think partly that's the problem. I think Australians are also very, very generous, and, you know, the concept of nature is still alive and well. But I think when it comes to distress, psychological or emotional distress, I think people don't know how to deal with that. In the same way that, you know, people have talked about, you know, families left behind when someone suicides, in the same way that people sort of say, well, you know, people were supportive initially and then they backed right up. You know, in lots of ways, we're not really equipped to deal with intangible problems. So if someone hurts themselves physically, then we know what to do. But if they're in pain psychologically or emotionally, we're not quite sure how to lend assistance.
If you've just tuned into the Informer on Joy 94.9, I'm chatting with Chris Tanti, CEO of Headspace. Chris, research out of the National LGBTI Health Alliance shows that the mental health of LGBTI people or young people is among the poorest in Australia, along with higher rates of suicide. In a society where being LGBTI is becoming more accepted, why are we still seeing rates of poor mental health in the community?
Well, I think it's one thing to have mainstream acceptance, whatever that is, and you know, I'm not sure that it's as tangible as we all think it is. I think it's another thing, it's totally another thing to come out. We grow up in a sort of heterosexual environment, and the expectations on individuals, regardless of whether they're same-sex attracted or not, the expectations to conform to a very narrow sort of way of operating in society is pretty intense. And when you discover your same-sex attracted, or your sort of questioning sexuality in other ways, it's pretty confronting, because you sort of wonder how other people are going to accept that. And I know lots of young people that I've worked with over the years and that I'm friends with who really struggle with the idea, even though their parents are quite accepting, they struggle with the idea of coming out, because it then attributes to them, you know, what society has always thought about same-sex attracted or LGBTIQ people. So it is a very complex psychological process, I think. But then when you're through that, it's a question of sort of, you know, trying to come to terms with what you've experienced growing up and then who you are as a person. And often we don't fit neatly into categories. So we might be same-sex attracted, but, you know, that might be fluid, that might not be fluid. So it's about, you know, for me, with the people I've worked with and friends that I have, it's about accepting who you are and accepting who you are as you define it.
Well, Chris Tanti, I'm afraid that's all we have time for this evening, but thank you so much for joining us on The Informer.
It's been a pleasure, an absolute pleasure.
A big thank you to our guests tonight, Chris Tanti from Headspace and Nick Hollis from the Institute of Many. Now, The Informer will be back tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. Up next is Outtakes with Daniel. My name is Emma Arnold.
And I'm Stephanie McLean. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.